live on your hard drive and edited profusely. It's the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, a show dedicated to the artistry and science of sports field management and celebrating the groundskeepers who create those masterpieces. The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics, for over 67 years providing solutions for sports field managers. On this edition of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, we're focusing in on mowing of sports fields, the artistic side of it, to be precise. It's something many of you are probably doing while listening to this show right now.
I know, I wish I was mowing right now, Paul.
Hey, you're supposed to be working.
Oh, that's right. In our bullpen session, we're going to be shooting the bull about, guess what?
Mowing. And today's Out of the Park interview is with someone whose contributions to the art of ball field groundskeeping has certainly earned him the title of a Diamond Da Vinci. David Meller, director of grounds with the Boston Red Sox, will join us. We'll talk about what inspired him to use his mowers and other tools artfully to express himself with his mowing patterns. We'll also ask him what are some of his favorite masterpieces that he has created and where he thinks this artistic drive may move to next on the ball fields.
And our final segment today is what we're calling Turf Tech. I've collected and tested a bunch of apps, and I'm going to talk about those and tell you what's good, what's bad, hopefully find some stuff that our listeners will find helpful out in the field.
We're going to have all of that and more, if you techies can handle it, on this edition of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast.
That couldn't have been more perfect if we'd rehearsed it, Paul.
That was great.
Oh, hey, everybody.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Teresa. I'm Paul Zawaska, the host of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, and I'm joined by the lovely Teresa Beyer, my talented co-host and producer of the show.
Hey, how's it going, you know?
From way up north. She's planted up there in Minneapolis.
It was 45 this week, Paul. It's and May.
Grass is loving it. It's just turgid as hell.
And green and beautiful.
Absolutely. It's loving life right now.
It is loving life.
Well, we're going to be talking about mowing today. We might even be thinking about mowing. We might think and talk about mowing, actually, while we're at it.
We were thinking about mowing, and then it dropped down to 40 degrees outside, and we don't have to anymore.
Well, you know, what is your favorite pattern, Teresa?
Okay, so my husband, Larry DeVito, the head groundskeeper for the Twins, he did this one pattern when he was in Pawtucket, the AAA field in Rhode Island, and it looks like, I'm gonna say it looks like grass, and that's going to sound so stupid. But it looks like grass that's laying over. And so it looks like these arcs are falling over each other, and it just looks really almost gothic.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense? Yeah. We've got a giant picture of it in the house, and I just love it. And I think it's beautiful.
Well, I think you should get that picture and put it on the website.
Can do.
So people know what you're talking about. So see if you can get that up on our...
I may have to take a picture of the picture.
Well, whatever you got to do. Trying to explain that is probably a little tougher than if you just show us the picture.
That's true. You know what my least favorite one is, though?
What's that?
And this is so embarrassing. You know how you take a rookie and you put him on a mower and you tell him to follow the arc of the outfield? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't do that.
How can you not do that?
I don't
pattern?
Know.
It's the most basic. I mean, that is the rookie pattern. You can't screw that up.
I've got some of the straightest lines out there, but if you ask me to do that arc, I screw it up every time. It's really bad. Oh, come on. You can't do them all perfectly.
I can't do it as perfectly as I used to anymore because I'm out of practice.
That's true.
I can't mow as straight as I used to because I don't do it regularly like I used to. But
yeah.
But that one, I think I can pretty well hang.
Well, what's your favorite pattern?
Well, my favorite pattern actually was one that we did. Actually, we were the first ones to do this pattern, and you see it now quite frequently out on Major League Baseball, and that is what we termed the rising sun pattern, which is where you see this the big rays coming out from emanating from home plate across the entire fan of the field. And it was actually a pattern that was suggested to me by one of my assistants, Ronnie Potter, at the time. This is back in the early 90s.
I remember Ronnie.
Right after we opened up the Oriole Park. And so what we did was we went out and we thought about this. We thought, okay, yeah, this could be pretty cool. So we decided, okay, we'll take the 90-degree angle of the field and set up a transit at home plate and you know, parcel out 10-degree increments.
Mm-hmm.
So we set up the transit, and at the back edge of the outfield, we put a pin at every spot where we hit a 10-degree mark. And then we ran a string line from there all the way back to home plate to get us our exact spaces, and then we mowed it in. And it was, of course, the pattern is very dramatic, especially from behind home plate.
I remember.
And we loved it, but one thing we did discover very quickly is that the turf in the narrow section closer to the edge of the pie, you know, at the point at home plate, gets really beat up because you have to keep running over that portion to get everything else mowed.
Yeah.
And so the turf in front of the plate would suffer. So we decided that was a very special pattern that we would only put in for, you know, very specific games. And we might do it. I think we only did it maybe 4 or 5 times total over my career at Oriole Park. But it was amazing how fast it got picked up by everybody else. there's been some neat variations of it over the years. But one of the things that was interesting was that our scouts for the ball club loved it.
Oh.
Because the scouts that would sit up in the seats were able to more accurately chart the hitters. Because you had perfect 10-degree increments. They could really get accurate at charting where the hitters were dropping the balls in the field. One of the reasons we stopped doing it, however, was Peter Angelos was not a big fan of that. He was a more traditionalist, liked more the traditional patterns. And so that's why we didn't do that anymore. So that's always been one of my favorites. We actually came up with, we developed 2 patterns in the years I was with the Orioles. The first one was in 86, where we started the dartboard pattern, what I call the dartboard, which is the circles around the mound.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time we put that in, that's when I was still the assistant under Pat Zanneron. And I put it in, and Pat thought it was really cool. And with that circle pattern on the infield, I did a normal plaid pattern on the outfield, the normal foul line cut. And Pat went up to pregame meal that night, and he's talking to our GM, whose name escapes me all of a sudden, of course, Hank Peters.
Ah.
And he says to Hank, he said, "What do you think of that mooring pattern out there?" He says, "I don't like it."
Ah. He said, "Good. That was that was the assistant. Wasn't me."
Yeah, he started saying what he didn't like about it. And Pat came down from dinner that night and he said, "I don't think you better mow that pattern in the field anymore, Paul." So that pattern then disappeared from our cavalcade of mowing patterns that we rotated around until after Hank Peters left. Hank left, we started putting it back in again. So those were the 2 patterns that we actually came up with at the Orioles back in those days. So that's where they got their start.
Well, you know, I did a little bit of research and I was trying to find where this began. And the closest approximation, and I even called one of the mowing companies and I was talking to them. They usually have like an unofficial historian, and they didn't know where this began.
The striping part, you mean?
Yeah. The most anybody thinks is that it probably started in golf. Had something to do with reading the fairways. I know my great grandfather.
No, golf can't take the credit for everything.
Well, but they're gonna try. My grandfather spoke of my great grandfather, who was a groundskeeper in golf, and him putting in some different patterns. Nothing as what we do now, and they didn't have the machinery, obviously. But the history is pretty much they've left that out. Apparently, we're not important enough for somebody to write that down. But I did find a really neat little quote that I wanted to bring up. A German monk in the 13th century, one of the first writings about keeping grass and keeping turf grass was he wrote in his gardening book, "For sight is in no way so pleasantly refreshed as by fine and close grass kept short." So, yeah, it's been around for a while as far as keeping turf nice and well cut and all of that. Although they used to use grazing animals, it was a lot harder to get them to put a pattern in.
Oh, that actually, Pat Sanderon, you know, who I started under in Baltimore, they had a herd of goats behind the outfield fence back in the 40s and 50s that they would bring out up at Elmira, and they would let graze in the outfield grass. And I don't know how you get a pattern out of that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It looks a little, it's a little random.
And then Pat was, this is when Pat was still pretty young, and then Pat was responsible for going around and picking up all the goat poop afterwards before the game.
Oh, I'd rather pick up after fireworks.
You better hope that he gets it all.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, my goodness. I wonder what's worse, goat or goose poop?
Goose poop's worse, I think.
I think so.
Geese tend to eat a lot of crabgrass. They love crabgrass. And then they spread it. I mean, I could go into a really great story about crabgrass on that one at Memorial Stadium, but I'm not going to. We'll have to say that for another show.
Yeah.
We got to head over to the bullpen and warm up.
Yep, let's do that.
So in the bullpen today, you want to lead this or should I?
Oh, you go on ahead. Although we can start with another interesting tidbit. Edwin Budding. And some people might remember that name or have heard about it in their turf classes if they took, you know, classes on turf management. He invented the first lawnmower, and that was in 1830. It was designed after a carpet cutter.
Goat on wheels?
I'm sorry?
Was it a goat on wheels?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That reminds me back when the internet started. That's how old we are, kids. Paul and I remember when the internet started. And they used to have this picture going around of an old reel mower attached to a bicycle. and all the turf people were sharing that. And that's what passed for fun back in those days. But that's just kind of where some of this got started as far as, you know, the new era of mowing, getting away from grazing animals.
They had carpet back in the 30s, 1830s?
They must have.
Apparently so. Well, let's jump back into the bullpen.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit more about, you know, some things that you do when doing striping on fields. And, you know, many of you who listen to us probably already know how to do this, but there are probably a lot of people who don't know some of the ins and outs of striping or how to make it brighter or how to make it more effective.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to throw a few things out here that we have. And, of course, the first is how do you plan a mowing pattern? And, you know, there's a lot of basic traditional mowing patterns. Most of it follows the geometry that's already set out by the ball field. You've got the radius cut, which you're so good at, Teresa, which is following the back radius of the outfield. That one's not going to be very dramatic to anybody sitting behind home plate or a home plate camera looking out, because it's going across from left to right in front of you or right to left.
It's going to be even less dramatic if I do it.
Yes. People sitting down the lines in the left field and right field corners, it will be effective to them because they'll be able to see that grain.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're looking across that field of vision. And actually, before I go any farther, why don't you explain how light reflection creates this whole striping effect?
Well, you know, it's funny how often we get asked about this, but yes. it's just an optical illusion more than anything else. As the grass is laid down, if it's pointing towards you, it's going to look darker. Wait, did I get that backwards?
That's correct. No,
yeah.
You're right.
I hate it when I do that. It's kind of like rhizomes and stolons. Even though I studied them for my master's degree, I still get them wrong. And if it's laying away from you, it's going to look lighter. And so that's why the arc pattern, depending on where you're sitting, looks more or less dramatic. Because if you're sitting behind home plate, you're looking at the grass folded down in directions that are neither towards nor away from you. They're to the side. And so they look pretty much the same at that point. Right. So that's also why we see the striping change as you move around the field.
Right. You get more reflection off of grass that's laying down away from you because the sun's hitting that at a lower angle and bouncing back off of it.
Well, it's hitting a smoother surface versus hitting a rougher surface. Yeah.
Right. Well, and it's more of it's being absorbed.
Right.
When it's in the opposite direction, it's pointing towards you.
Right. I guess that's what I meant is as it's pointing towards you, what the light is hitting that's being reflected to your eyes is that rougher surface of the ends of the leaves versus when it's pointing away from you, you're seeing all of those smooth surfaces from where the grass is laying down. Yeah.
And another way to look at that is if you look at acoustic tile, a smoother acoustic tile doesn't absorb as much sound as a coarse, really rough acoustic tile, which absorbs a lot of sound.
Yeah.
Somewhat similar to the same thing. So
yeah,
so
that's why we're recording. You know, I record here in my office versus over in the kitchen where I've got a lot less smooth, you know, a lot more smoother surfaces. And so we'd have a lot more echo.
Right. Exactly. So that's how we get the different shades of colors. And you're right. It's the most commonly asked question that we get.
Yeah.
Now, another difference that you're going to run into is the difference between cool season and warm season grasses.
Yeah. That makes a big difference.
Fields. Huge difference because in the northern climates where both Teresa and I are, you're typically mowing bluegrass or ryegrass at least an inch or on the higher end sports fields to anywhere from 2 to 3 inches when you get down to the park and rec and little leagues and farther on down. The longer that grass is, the more it's going to have the ability to bend over and create a more dramatic grain in the grass.
Well, and the other part of that, all right, here we go. I'm going to geek out. This is what I studied in school. The warm season grasses, by and large, now this does not count seashore paspalum. It acts differently. But the warm season grasses tend to be more turgid. They tend to stand up more. And so getting them to lay down to give you that major difference that you want to look at visually, getting them to lay down is harder because they're, like you said, right, they're usually cut shorter, but also they tend to stand up on their own a little bit more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, there are ways to cheat that system.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the best ways if you're dealing with the southern grasses and you need the pattern to stick out really well, is by adding dye to your spray tank or turf paint to paint those leaves. And then once you do that and put a mowing pattern in, you're going to see that pattern jump. And
now,
equally as impressive on cool season grasses, of course. It just makes that reflection and absorption of light much more intense.
So just to clarify, we're talking about putting that dye over the entire field, not putting it to one stripe or another. Yeah.
Good point. Yeah. You dye the entire field or you paint the entire field, but by doing that, you increase the amount of reflection and absorption of light. So it really makes it jump out. The other thing you have to think about is the light angles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could if you mow your pattern during the day and it really knocks your socks off, but you've got a night game, and suddenly you go out there for the night game and it seems more washed out and it's not as impressive. Part of that's because of the lighting.
Yep.
The reflection's going to show up much more intense when it's a one direction of light source
light
coming
source.
At it.
Yep.
Yeah. When you have it multi-directional, like you do in a stadium where the lighting comes from all different angles, it really washes out the pattern because you don't get as an intense intense effect on reflection. Now, again, painting or dyeing that turf, even with lights, will actually still help increase the intensity of that of that mowing pattern. So if you really want a knock down, drag out pattern, you want to go in there and dye that turf or paint that turf, and you'll see that actually quite a bit. Especially in the early part of the year in Major League Baseball when it's cold out in the north and they can't get their grass green. And you know, you'll see the first games of the year and it's like, oh, man, look at that mowing pattern. How are they doing that at 40 degrees? Well, it ain't the grass.
Well, unless you've got a heater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even then, though.
But even then,
sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. Yeah. You know, the dyes and the paints have changed so much since when you and I, you know, were in the business. And it's... You want to try different ones, and what works for Bob down the road might not work for you. That's part of the artistry of this is figuring out which tools, which things that you're going to use that work best for the way that you do things and the way that your stadium is lit and the way that your grass takes the different dyes. And
I suggest if you are going to look at dyes, get a couple different brands because the colors can be tremendously different between one another, and one might look really good and one might look kind of
and it could be that your grass just looks different.
And so you want to find a place to test that just off the field and find the color that you're looking for. So those are things to look at. Now there are instances where people don't want mowing patterns, and I'll give you for instance on that. When I was with the Orioles, Cal asked me actually not to put a mowing pattern on the infield because of the the snaking effect. This is once he had moved over to third base is actually where he started asking me for it.
You mean as he started getting older?
Yeah, you know, of course, third base, the distance is a lot shorter to you, so you have time to react.
Yeah.
And I believe that's when he started asking me to not put the pattern on the infield, which I obliged him and did. And eventually, again, it was ownership that came to me about a year later and said, hey, how come you're not putting the pattern in the infield grass? And I said, well, Cal has asked not to have it on there. And they said, well, we don't care what Cal wants. I want the mowing pattern in the field. And so I had to put the mowing pattern back in the field. And I went down to Cal that day at the batting cage, and I said, Cal, you'll notice there's a mowing pattern in the field. I just want you to know I have nothing to do with this. I was forced by the guy who signs my paycheck to put it back in. Be damned what you think. So, you know, that situation. Now, Greg Elliott, I was just talking to Greg last week out in San Francisco. And if you've noticed, the whole time he's been in San Francisco, there's been no mowing pattern. In fact, since that ballpark was built, there has been no mowing pattern on that field.
That's right.
And that is purpose. That is on purpose because the owner, one of the owners there, has preferred not to have a mowing pattern on there because he wants it to remind him of one of his old ballparks that he used to visit all the time. When he was, I believe it was Ebbets Field, if I recall correctly, he remembers there was never a mowing pattern out there, and he just thinks that's a better look for an old-time ballpark is no mowing pattern. So Greg's been asked not to put a mowing pattern in his field, and so that's the reason why you don't see a mowing pattern in his field, whereas everybody else's does. So it's just somebody else's difference of opinion of what they think a ballpark should look like.
Yep, absolutely. Well, and another thing that I remember you and I talking about when I first started working with you back when I was a wee little thing, is making sure that we're not burning in the same pattern over and over, because you do end up having an effect on the play of the ball. Now, that's greatly true in soccer. You know, it's hardly an effect at all in football, but it can have an effect in baseball too.
Oh, yeah, especially in the outfield because it gets more dramatic as the ball starts slowing down. Mm-hmm. And when you stand behind a batting cage and watch a ball on a field that's been striped pretty heavily, you can see that baby snake real easy.
Yeah.
And I used to have Brady Anderson constantly attack me about putting mowing pads in the outfield. And I said, Brady, that mowing pad is not going out. The big guy upstairs wants the patterns in. So live with it.
Yeah. So the best you can do is change them up and try to get them to go in different directions. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Well, and then just for fun, I will have in the show notes this week, I found an old USA Today article about mowing patterns from 2001, all the way back in the day. But it talks a little bit about San Francisco and having the different patterns in. But also, I found a fun article in Wired.com where he goes through the math about finding the most efficient way to mow your lawn. So it may not be the prettiest way, but it certainly is how you can figure out the quickest and fastest, easiest way to get it done. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Very cool. That is your homework for next week, folks, is to read that article.
It's not homework.
All right. With that, we're going to move on. Let's get a word from our sponsor real quick, and we'll move on to our Out of the Park segment.
Sounds good.
Well, it's ball season, and we all know what that means. The rains cometh. So we're putting tarps on and taking them off over and over and over again. It's no fun folding or rolling up those mound plate area tarps each time and straining your back while lugging them to the field somewhere. That's where Beacon's Tarp Cart plays big dividends by saving your back from the strain. It can hold both your mound and home plate tarp, no matter the size or weight of the material. Additionally, depending on how you outfit your tarp cart, you can corral your tarp pins in convenient tarp pin holders, or if you prefer weighting your tarps down, the tarp cart can hold up to 36 Beacon field weights. These are rubber weights used to hold down the edges of your area tarps. They won't break like sandbags do, and you can carry them four or six at a time in your hand. The tarp cart can even store and haul those heavy weighted tarps for easier transport. The cart can be pushed around like a wheelbarrow or towed behind a utility vehicle. Do your back a favor and purchase a Beacon tarp cart with or without the optional Beacon field weights. And you can save 20% on new mount and home plate tarps if ordered along with the tarp cart. Now that deserves the steel sign. Look up the Beacon Tarp Card at our web store at www.beaconathletics.com or call us at 800-747-5985. Give your back a break. Well, now it's time for our Out of the Park segment, and this is the portion of the show that involves an extensive, informative, educational, and sometimes entertaining interview with interesting people from the sports turf industry.
I hope more than sometimes, Paul.
Yes, well, we try. Our guest for this podcast is someone who became a real trailblazer in our industry. In the late 80s and the early 90s, he was honing his artistic skills back in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where he was working for the Brewers as an intern and eventually as the second assistant. He developed what would be his legacy, in my opinion, crafting innovative mowing patterns and designs, first with just non-traditional striping patterns, and then slowly he modified his techniques and began emblazing images within the mowing pattern on the County Stadium turf. His art caught, obviously, immediate attention by all of us in the sports turf industry at the time. It wasn't long, though, before imitators began showing their own artistic masterpieces on their fields at all levels of play. Our guest moved on. In 2000, he headed up to take care of the historic Fenway Park playing surface and continues his graphic mastery on their emerald green playing surface. And with his success along the way, he's also authored two books, one titled Picture Perfect, Mowing Techniques for Lawns, Landscapes, and Sports, and the second, The Lawn Bible, How to Keep It Green, Groomed, and Growing Every Season of the Year. I want to see how he does that in the northern climate when we're under snow. With that long-winded introduction, I'd like to welcome the very person whom defines the term Diamond Da Vinci, Boston Red Sox Director of Grounds, David Miller.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the kind words. Glad to be on your show.
Thanks, Dave. We're glad that you accepted to come and talk with us today. Now, you know, you and I almost crossed paths way back in the County Stadium days. I did an internship the summer before you were there, I think. And I'm trying to remember, I think it was the summer of 83, right before I graduated. I graduated in May of 84. From the University of Wisconsin, and I did only a couple week internship back then with Harry Gill, and so you were there. Do you remember when your internship was?
Yeah, in 84. It spring was of 84.
Okay, and you were you just there for 1 year for your internship?
No, I interned for the Brewers for 2.5 years, and then my last season there, I went out and interned for the California Angels and the San Francisco Giants at Candlestick too.
Okay.
And after I graduated from Ohio State in December of 87, the Brewers created a position for me.
They actually created the position for you. Well, you must have left.
Yeah.
You must have left some good mojo when you left there after 2.5 years.
No kidding.
Things worked out well. It could have been nicer. It was, you know, always wanted to be in baseball and have the honor to work there. It was an incredible opportunity with Gary and Harry.
Yeah, and it was, and actually, when I got there, Gary was fairly new when I got there. When I got into turf management in the early '80s, Dr. Love, who ran the UW turf program at the University of Wisconsin, he had told me, "Man, it's a shame you didn't start a little earlier because the Brewers called me looking for an assistant, and nobody wanted it here in the turf program." I was like, "Oh my God, there goes my chance to get in Major League Baseball!" And luckily, I had somebody who gave me a chance, and in Pat Sandro in Baltimore, and just like you did with Harry. And Harry was an interesting guy. I mean, no doubt about it.
Yeah, he gave me incredible opportunities.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was a little powder keg. I love that guy. He was great. So you started permanently there what year then in Milwaukee as a second assistant?
88.
88, okay. And when did you start deciding you wanted to do some experimenting away from the normal traditional mowing patterns?
Well, certainly growing up, one of the ways I earned money was to take care of people's home lawns. And my brother taught me that attention to detail, whether it was a traditional checkerboard pattern or something unique, was attention to details. And so I had an opportunity to mow with the Brewers when I was an intern, and they were, you know, both from Harry and Gary and Commissioner Seelig, who was the owner at the time, and our boss, Gabe Paul Jr., who were very supportive of, I guess, learning from my mistakes and, you know, being supportive of creativity and letting us try new things, both when the team was there, but also when the team was away.
Hmm. So did you start trying some of these patterns when you were an intern, or what did it really start after you became a second assistant?
You know, I think certainly I learned a lot about mowing when I was an intern and having the opportunity to participate then. But then certainly when I became full-time, had an opportunity to, you know, work together with Gary and Harry Moore and discussing what we were trying to achieve. And you know, when we were doing different patterns, you know, based on weather and the wear of what the field was under, both from the weather as well as events. But certainly if a pattern had any challenges with it. But really, they were supportive throughout that process and certainly started those as, you know, as a PDA, being quite unique alone. Did some...
I'm sorry, can you repeat that last line? I think we had a little bit of lag on the Skype.
We certainly did some patterns of varying width lines and staggering the patterns that way when I was an intern, and then just got more involved in those when I became full-time in 88.
Out of curiosity, now that you're at a very high-profile stadium, are you in a position to allow that sort of creativity for your interns and assistants?
Yeah, you know, it's a group effort. Anytime we're doing something here at Fenway, you know, it's something that we take a lot of pride in, and it's, you know, I think you're only as good as people around you. And it's, we have teamwork that's involved in that. Certainly, if it's going to be a unique pattern or something, you know, festival like the Sox logo, sometimes the requests will come from upstairs themselves. Otherwise, you know, certainly, if it's going to be something unique that we've come up with, we'll certainly run it by the proper people, powers to get there, make sure everybody works.
When you started doing this, you were pretty much just taking the basic patterns and just kind of embellishing them a little bit, I'm assuming.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, most groundskeepers know, at least in baseball, even back then, that a pattern was a great way to hide turf damage, and especially if you had hosted a special event. Of course, that was also in the days of standard definition television. You know, nowadays with high def television.
Exactly.
You know, the one thing I've always said is thank God I got out of Major League Baseball when I did, because HD pretty much came in shortly after I left, and it's a lot harder to hide something nowadays than it was back then. But, I mean, it was pretty common knowledge that a mowing pattern and TV at that time hid a thousand sins on a playing field. At what point did you find that you started using more than just the mower to make the patterns? Was it when things became more intricate, when you were starting to, you know, put pictures in more, or, you know, because I know you started working with things like rollers and brooms and things like that. What was the reason for that innovation?
Well, you know, the first we went through a phase at County Stadium where we had annual bluegrass, and you know, it was a soil-based field, and annual bluegrass thrived there. And so I realized that, you know, varying widths of our lines, if we made the pattern light-colored, the majority of the pattern light, looking from home plate out, kind of helped camouflage that camera angle from home plate or from, you know, where the fans were sitting the majority of the seats. So we would do varying widths of lines from, you know, big and small diamonds to big and small squares to bigger... home plate to second base stripes that were in the light color. And then we had a Paul McCartney concert in 1993 where it literally, I think it rained 5 of the 7 days the stage was out there, and it poured. And it was a front load stage of a 24 foot wide plywood road that when that was lifted, all the grass underneath was from mid-stage to where they started the road was dead. And not only was it dead, it smelled. It was mud. And the team was coming back the next day. And so we brought in a verti drain that night to deep pine aerate, and we top dress that area with green turfus. We top dress it with grass clippings to try to help hide the damage, but aesthetically, it still stuck out like a sore thumb.
Sure.
And I had talked to Gary and said, you know, I thought if we could make a unique pattern on the infield, it could possibly draw people's attention away from that damage. And so we ran it by our vice president, Gabe Paul Jr., and made kind of a pattern within a pattern of straight lines and checkerboards on the infield. So we had different quadrants of straight lines and put it in. At that time, I would, you know, I stayed overnight while the vertidrain was working, and I would put part of the pattern in, go on the upper deck and look down, come back down and fine tune it. And we played the Yankees at homestand, and I remember Phil Rizzuto was the announcer, and he basically talked about the infield pattern and never brought up this huge mud streak in the outfield. And we started hearing from, you know, not only colleagues of other groundskeepers, but fans and players and people talking about the pattern. And we realized, you know, it really could draw people's attention away from an eyesore. You know, while we made it as safe and playable as we could, it definitely, you know, helped hide that damage in its own way. While it wasn't on top of the damage, where sometimes you can do that too, this was just drawing the attention from one area away from one area to the other.
It, you know, it's amazing how geometry can really draw the human eye to, you know, to something away from something else that might be a little ugly or out of place. But that's exactly what you were discovering at the time.
Yeah, you know, it's something that we learned from it. You know, not only learned from our mistakes, but learned what would work in different situations, and then use that for future challenges, where whether it was an event or just Mother Nature or something else that, you know, maybe the field didn't look as nice as we'd like. You know, once again, safety and playability is our first priority, but, you know, whether it's somebody walking to their seats or turning on their TV for the first time, you think you have that one opportunity to catch somebody's attention, and we try to make that a good impression, whether, like I say, it's a traditional checkerboard pattern or something festive like the Sox logo.
So at what point then, when was the first time you decided to put a picture into the field versus just stripes?
You know, the Brewers changed their logo to an M. I always wanted to put my initial out in the outfield as just kind of as a joke and get a picture of it. And so I mentioned to Gary, I said, hey, this would be a great opportunity. We can do the block M for the Brewers logo. And at the same time, I can think of it, you know, it's for my last initial. And he said, yeah, we'll give it a try. And the young man who helped me put it in, his name was Wazinski, which started with a W. And so he told people from the bleachers it stood for Wisconsin, but it really he thought it stood for his name. So that was something we did, you know, just in a short homestand to have fun with it. And realized, you know, there was a lot of different tools we could use to do patterns. You know, you don't have to have the expensive reel mowers. While they can, you know, certainly do a great job, you know, we've used push brooms to roller squeegees to homemade hand rollers that I talk about and how to build in Picture Perfect with old lawnmower handles and PVC pipe to water pressure. You know, we use water pressure a lot to put in our patterns. You know, once again, not encouraging anybody to waste water, but in safety and playability, our first priority, we want to make sure your field drains well. But it's amazing what water can do, just enhancing straight line pattern when you're hand watering.
Oh, yeah.
Let alone, when Bruce Springsteen played, it's anyway, he wrote the word Bruce on the infield, and one of the guys suggested we make the B a Red Sox B, and that was done probably in 15 minutes with a hose. And
oh, wow.
So I think that was, once again, that was a group effort and a suggestion from an intern who was working for us at the time.
Just like an artist with his brushes and his palette. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Okay, now here's the big question. Have you ever put out a picture or a pattern or anything like that and not realize you made a mistake until it's on air on TV? And maybe only you noticed it, but you go, oh my God, there's something we did wrong.
What was that old commercial where they paint chefs in the background?
Chefs, yeah. Painting one. So the question is, did that ever happen when you mowed something in like that?
Well, you know, there's certainly been times where what works on paper and you put it out on the grass doesn't look the same, especially from the angles you're looking at, that you may end up actually taking it out, kind of like a Etch-a-Sketch and erasing it. There's been times where I've had to fine-tune patterns where we would go out the last day. You know, a lot of times, if it's a unique pattern, unless we just got the request that day, we'll put it in, you know, the day before the homestand or maybe 2 days before. And I try to look at it from the different camera angles, our owner's box. And there's been times where we'll go back and fine-tune something just to make sure that more size dimension usually than oh my gosh, this didn't
have the
exactly
impact
right.
You thought, right? Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. You know, that's the tough part when you talk about a huge outfield that you're going to put something on, and especially if you're doing a picture, like for instance, St. Louis with the arches, or you with your socks and things like that. Trying to figure out what is the right size to have the right impact has got to be the hardest part. You know, that's where, Dave, you need to come up with a computer program to be able to develop that, you know, do the drawing on there first to scale so that you can figure it out.
You'll sell 10 copies.
I think a lot of it is trial and error.
And experience, I'm sure.
Finding out what works on your field from the dimensions and the look you're trying to achieve it from too.
Yeah. Now I understand this design work is kind of all in the family because some of your inspiration has come from within. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, some of my favorite patterns I've been a part of are actually ones that my daughters have participated in or even come up with the whole idea. And, 1987, I was contacted by a group of architects out of New York City called Scottidio and Diller. They were putting on an international touring art exhibit called the American Home Lawn, Surface of Everyday Life. They talked about how lawns are in our lives from not only neighbors who one person may have, you know, passion for their yard and doesn't have a blade out of place to the next door neighbor who has, you know, grass that's, you know, a foot high. To golf courses, to famous lawns like the White House and Central Park. And so they asked if I would document mowing patterns throughout the season from directly behind home plate and from center field looking in at the season in Milwaukee. And so the Brewers supported that. And so we did that. And at the end of the season, they called and said, you know, we really like all the patterns. A lot of things have a lot of straight lines or right angles in them. Could you think of something artsy and wild? I said, let me think about this. And this was a Friday night. I think it was the very, like, Halloween or the 1st of November. And I wasn't really planning on doing any unique patterns or patterns really in general. And I hung up the phone, and my daughter, who was in second grade at the time, said, Dad, who was on the phone? And I said, well, the people at the art exhibit. And she said, what'd they want? And I told her that they wanted an artsy and wild pattern. So she went in her bedroom and came back about an hour later with a light and dark green sparkle crayon drawing of the field laid out with a sunburst on the infield. And she called rays of light, you know, wiggly lines coming out from that sunburst.
Oh,
and
lovely.
I had never seen anybody mow a crooked line on purpose before. And so I thought, hey, you know, maybe she's got an idea here. So I called my buddy, my colleague at work, Kurt Backus, who worked for the Brewers and then later the Redskins. And said, hey, would you give me a hand tomorrow? I have an idea for a pattern that Khaki came up with. And he kind of said, really? And so we went in the next morning. It took us 45 minutes to do this pattern. We put it in, took pictures of it. And back then it was slide film. So we had the slide developed, FedExed them to New York. And New York called when they got the slides on the conference call. And they said, oh, my gosh, this is our favorite pattern. What inspired you? How did you come up with this incredible idea? And I said, no, it wasn't me. It was my daughter in second grade. And so it's been fun to see that pattern replicated on other other venues, from high schools to football, to soccer. Several, you know, probably 6 years ago, I saw it at Daytona and called down to Daytona and said, you know, is there any chance I could speak to the groundskeeper just to tell him how incredible I think their pattern is? And I was able to get through, and Sam Newfer and his crew do an incredible job down there. And he said, oh, that's your daughter's pattern. And so it was just fun to see. And I encourage people to ever get a chance to check out Daytona. You know, people talk about patterns, wondering if it's done at different mowing heights, mm-hmm. if it's done with paint or different type grasses. And for years, I always just told people the direction you mow, you know, light stripes mow away from you and a dark stripes mow toward you. Well, Sam and his staff down there actually do use two types of grass to do their patterns.
Oh, wow. They use
annual rye and perennial rye.
Oh.
Because I said, Sam, I can't believe how your pattern just glows. How did you get the contrasting so vivid?
Huh.
And he said, well, let me tell you a little story. And sure enough, they do it with two different grasses. And,
that's amazing.
Get a chance to check them out.
Yeah.
And when Red Sox 100th year of the team was in 2001, not at the ballpark, but at the team. And so ownership had asked if we could do a 100 in the outfield. So we made the number one a baseball bat and made the two zeros baseballs. And Fenway, when I came here, was the most antiquated field in baseball. There was not subsurface drainage. It had an 18-inch crown to the field and did not
Holy
have
cow.
Automatic irrigation. There was a hose in each dugout to water the infield and foul. And there were seven places in the outfield you could put an old-fashioned impact sprinkler, some of which overlapped too much, some were places where the grass never got water.
Oh, my gosh. I had no idea.
It was an interesting challenge. And so my daughter said, hey, Dad, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, well, this was Friday night. I said, well, I'm going in to work on a pattern. She said, can I go in and help? I said, sure. So I said, you know, we're driving in. She said, you know, what are we going to do? And I said, well, you can help me lay out the circles for the baseballs. And then how about if you hand water while I do the pattern? She said, okay. And she was 10 at the time. And when we got here, we got the circle laid out. She said, Dad, how about if I do the pattern and you hand water? So she put the two baseballs in with a walk behind greens mower. And I think, you know, once again, patterns only limits by your imagination, and anybody can do them as long as they're careful with what they're doing. And so those are two of my favorite patterns that they've been a part of.
Yeah, we have another name for that squiggly pattern that your daughter created. It's called rookie mowing. Those are the patterns we give the rookies because they can't tell if they screwed up or not. That's pretty neat how your daughters were that involved in that, though. That's interesting.
As you know, the hours that we all work can be crazy in sports turf, and so it was just wonderful to have. I was glad she had an interest to be with me, you know.
Yeah, well, I had a nice little tie between her life and yours. Well, you know, besides all the artistic striping and imaging going on ball field turf, you know, you're also starting to see artwork creep onto the skin areas with logos on the mounds and, you know, some softball fields striping their infields with top dressing materials. Do you think these artistic expressions have legs, or, you know, do you think that will expand out more?
You know, I think it can. You know, I think it all goes back to safety and playability again. You know, I think there's going to be an interest from a corporate end, whether it's a grass pattern or a stencil on the skin or your mound or on your plate, for, you know, a club or a foundation or somebody to generate some revenue. And I think it's just important to make sure that it's not affecting playability and, you know, what somebody wants.
So what you're telling us is that we're going to see a commercial on turf pretty soon, emblazoned into the turf.
You just stole my question. I read an old article from Grounds Maintenance magazine that you and Steve Whiteman had written, and then another article in USA Today, and they were asking that question almost 10 or 15 years ago, and we're still asking it today.
Let's hope we keep asking that.
You know, I think that it could be done. It just has to be done well, and what works agronomically versus what an advertiser wants behind their dollar signs and how crisp it has to look. You know, I just think there would have to be some understanding there of, you know, some days maybe the pattern's not as vivid, or
it's not like
whatever you're doing on the mound. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You just don't want to affect playability because of wear or because they want more of a colored conditioner put on because it'll show up more where it's actually changing how the ball bounces.
Well, you know, but, and the bigger question, Dave, will be is will the fans accept having an ad put on that way onto a field? Now, you know, you can say that fans don't have a lot of say in that kind of thing, but, you know, you could potentially turn off some fans in that kind of situation, I would think.
Yeah, I think, it's all how it's done and you know, the agreement between the advertiser and whatever facility is doing it.
Well, I tell you, you've given us some great insight into how this all developed. And, you know, in my opinion, you are the godfather of this because I think you really helped bring it to the forefront starting way back there in the late 80s and early 90s. And I think a lot of people have admired what you've brought to the industry. And, I think it definitely is your legacy of how you've helped promote a more artistic expression of the mowing patterns on turf and the things that we can do. And we really appreciate you coming on and talking about it today, Dave.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate your kind words. And I wouldn't be doing any of this without the incredible support of my coworkers and my family. It's definitely a group effort.
Well, we've had a rainy period around the U.S., especially along the Gulf Coast states the past couple of weeks, and all I can say is thank goodness for Beacon Puddle Sponges. They are a quick, easy, and cost-effective way to remove standing water from an infield. No infield material is disturbed or relocated when using this product. The sponges are 20 inches by 15 inches and 3 inches thick, and they come 3 to a set. They're instantly reusable. You simply go to your puddle, soak up the water into the sponge, and walk off on a grassy surface and wring it out. The puddle sponge is immediately ready to soak up more water right away. Save the drying agent until after you removed all the standing water off your infield skin. These sponges have a long life, and the cover is removable in case you need to wash it and get out any of the fine clay and silt particles that get into the fabric. They also have a convenient hanging loop on each sponge, so you can hang them out to air dry when you're done using them. Hide the brooms and hang these in your dugouts for the coaches and volunteers to use. Get your Beacon Puddle Sponges by going to the Beacon web store at www.beaconathletics.com or call our experienced sales staff at 800-747-5985. Suck it up. Don't sweep it out. Is your field Beacon Puddle Sponge worthy?
Well, let's get started on our Turf Tech segment. What do you think, Paul?
Sure.
Your enthusiasm for my segments really makes me feel so welcome as a member of this podcast.
The tech part, as the aged groundskeeper that I am, it's the tech part that always gets me a little scared.
Well, I'm not going to do anything crazy. I just want to talk about some apps today. Right. I was doing a lot of web running for this week's show, looking up things about mowing and trying to find some history and fun facts and things. And, just kind of... I was morbidly curious to see what the general public thinks about mowing, things like that. And boy, ooh, it's scary. But, I didn't find anything really special or unexpected, but I was starting to think about where we were as far as, when we'll be putting this podcast out or this episode out. And we're getting over the hump of opening day. We're getting into the meat of the season. And it might be a good time for our listeners to try out a new app. And so I wanted to see what was out there. And I looked Apple and Android. And the first thing I started, I looked for some turf apps. And the first ones that popped up were some that I'd seen almost a decade ago, it feels like. Turfgrass Weed ID by the University of Georgia. It's free. It's Apple only, unfortunately. And they also have a larger app that goes into more than just the weed identification. It goes into some turf tips and some other information. But the thing is, it's the same app it was 10 years ago. So if you've seen this app, you've seen this app. If you haven't seen it, you might want to check it out. But it's more a study guide than it is something that will help you identify weeds. So I wasn't crazy about it. And then I saw one that looked a little promising from NCSU, which was a sports turf app, and it's free. It's on iPhone and on Android, or iOS and Android, but it doesn't have a lot of content. It's set up to have a ton of content, but they seem to have not followed through, or not been able to follow through, or they're not updating the content. I'm not sure what happened. So that was disappointing.
That's usually a bad sign when you get an app that suddenly it never gets updated. That kind of tells you that, okay, apparently they're not interested in keeping this thing up and going. And
or the person who was doing it doesn't have a position there anymore. Or,
Yeah, exactly.
It's a real shame, too, because it had a lot of links to different articles, and it was kind of interesting. So that was kind of a bummer. But what I did find a couple that, well, one of them we talked about in our secret episode.
Yes, the one that will be released when I die.
Well, we did a practice episode. Yeah, we did a practice episode where we talked to the twins guy, to my guy, to Larry, and he talked about his favorite app, which is the Sunseeker. And this is available on Android also, but it doesn't have quite the functionality that it has on iOS, but it still has the important functionality, which is it will allow you to see and to predict the sun position for any day of the year on your field. And you actually go to like a Google map and you pull up the area that you want to see, whether it's multiple fields or one field or however you want to set it up. And it will tell you, it will give you the arc position of the sun throughout the day. It's $10, but or $9.99. But I got to tell you, it's Larry loves it. It helps him know when he has to be in the morning to take the tarp off, or he can call me
apparently
and tell
Larry
me when
can't
he's
find the sun.
Well, this way you know for sure, smart Alec. Nice. I'm going to tell him you said that. He's meaner than he looks. No. Gonna come beat you up. No, but it really is good, and it also has helped them a lot with planning. When they've had like marketing shoots or anything like that, or you know, different events. There was one he was telling me about. They had a wedding out there, and he kept telling them, "There will be no sun. There will be no sun. You will be disappointed. There will be no sun when you want to have your ceremony, when you want to do your pictures." And they said, "No, we want to do it." That's how he says that they sound. You know, because nobody's ever reasonable when they want to use your field for something other than baseball. But, you know, it has helped him out a lot for being able to plot those out and helping him find his shady spots in the wintertime. So that's been kind of neat. That's a neat little app. And then the other one I found that surprised me was put out by New Holland Tractors. And they have a farming weather forecast that they put out, and you can do it by location. So you can do it by your zip code or by your town. You can also look for local weather stations. So I can put in Minneapolis, but I can also look for a weather station that's closer to me than downtown Minneapolis. And it will give you your local weather and your dew point. It will give you your evapotranspiration, your predicted evapotranspiration, and that it does it by crop. So you can actually do it for turf. And it will give you the predicted evapotranspiration, and it will give you your growing degree days, either to 32 degrees or to 50 degrees. It is available on Android as well, and it's free. And I'm pretty impressed with it. Now, it does a lot of other stuff that's more related to farming, but it still is kind of interesting to be able to pull that up and at a moment's notice be able to see some of those, you know, especially the growing degree days and the evapotranspiration. We talked a lot last episode about how we can use evapotranspiration to help us with our irrigation, and now here's a way to just be able to push a button and pull up and see what your ET is. And I thought that was really nice. Yeah,
that I think will be a very handy tool for a lot of our groundskeepers who are listening to us on the line here.
Well, and like you said when we were doing the pre-show, when we were talking, you were saying that, well, you can just do the math, Teresa. And I said, well, not everybody wants to do the math, Paul. And this is a way that you can just skip that and just get a number that you can work with that is, you know, pretty accurate, or they wouldn't be using it in farming. I can tell you that.
Frankly, I'm kind of shocked that they actually have turf in their. In their program.
Yeah.
You know, New Holland is not really in the turf industry.
Nope.
They're all farming, but that's impressive that they've actually given us a little piece of their action.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of cool. But so that got me thinking, you know, we were thinking about talking about tasks that we don't necessarily like to do and other things during the season. And I've been playing with these apps myself, these next two, and they're productivity apps in a way. One of them, now these are Apple only, I'm afraid, but one of them is called Optimize Me, and the other one is called Momentum. And in this era of tracking everything that we do, these are trackers. And so what you can do is use them for yourself, to track yourself and track your own performance. So Optimize Me, it's fully customizable. You keep all your data. Nobody else is going to get their hands on your data. And you can track what... There's a lot of ways you can do it. I've been using it to track my working hours versus my sleeping hours, and my mood and my tiredness. And I'm just trying to get a handle on how much more productive am I when I've had a good night's sleep versus when I've had a disturbed night's sleep. I have, you know, we have little guy. So I get disturbed.
Modern version of the mood ring. Is that what you're saying?
Well, essentially, yeah. But it also lets you start to learn more about how you're working and how you're functioning. It can get lots more complex than that. But it, you know, it's a good way to kind of keep a running tally on how some things are going. And, you know, maybe you have a bad mowing pattern day and you realize, well, you didn't get much sleep, or that was the day when maybe you tied on a few too many the night before. But it helps you to be able to see those sorts of patterns in your life. And it's just kind of fun to do, I think. I don't know. Paul, you don't need to track anything like that. You've got a handle on yourself, right?
I'm not going to comment.
And then the last one is one called Momentum. And it's bloody simple. This one's great. So you put in whatever behavior it is you want to do. So one of the things I always struggled with when I was working at the field was I needed to run laundry pretty much every night. But I didn't always want to do it because I came home and I was freaking exhausted. So to get myself in the habit, one of the things you can do is start to create this habit by doing the same behavior that you want to create every day. And you get essentially a running tally of it, an uninterrupted tally of doing this task over and over. And you can start with one or two. It's probably better, I think, from what I've read, to start with just with one at a time, and you can stack them on. But basically, Momentum allows you to track how often you do this behavior, or, you know, whatever it is you want to do, so that you can create your habit, so that it becomes second nature to you.
Does it send you a reminder every day saying, hey, you could need to do the laundry? Or
it does.
Is that what it does?
Okay. It sends you a reminder, and it gives you an opportunity to put a little tick mark on the calendar.
Okay.
And so you can see that you've had the uninterrupted behavior for so long. And now they do have a paid version of it that will allow you to track more than 5 different behaviors. But, you know, really, if you just want to try it out and see how it goes, you only need the free version. One of the things I've been doing, one of the things I've been tracking, is I've been looking to see how often I go to the gym. And I'm trying to get an uninterrupted, you know, set of times that I go to the gym. And I've been liking it so far. It's actually encouraged me to keep going because I don't want to break the streak. You know, kind of like Seinfeld said, he tries not to break the streak. He tries to write every single day. So I just thought that was interesting.
You know what we need an app for?
I'm scared.
No, I mean, to me, this is, and I've thought about this for a long time. And actually, I can remember thinking about this back when I was still groundskeeper for the Orioles.
They didn't have apps back then, Paul.
They didn't. They had computers back then, and they had software. And I always thought to myself,
true.
Somebody needs to come up with a computer program, or in this case, now an app for designing mowing patterns or sizing. You know,
that'd be great on an iPad.
If you want to put some type of an image out on your field,
yeah,
like Dave Miller was saying, you know, you have to figure out how to size that.
Yeah,
you know, there's two ways to do it. There's you either lay it out in graph paper to make sure you get the right thing, or maybe somebody's developed an app where you could instantly drop it in and size it and get it to the way you want it.
That would be
really
cool. That'd be really cool.
Or even a software program. Any one of those things I think would be really nice to have like that. So all you gearheads and nerds and geeks out there, get on it.
Hey, you know, that reminds me. We were talking about this earlier. We were talking about the patterns that we love and all of that. It'd be great to see some of the patterns that our listeners like.
Well, the other thing I'd like to do is get the listeners to also send in, you know, we can't see every app, but there's a lot of our listeners out there who have found other apps that pertain to our business that they have come to rely on. And so we'd love it if you folks send us your ideas of some of the great apps that you guys like, if you can.
Absolutely.
Send them to our email, which we'll tell you in a few minutes here at the end of the show.
Yeah.
We'd love to see it, and we'll even probably talk about it at some point during the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
Continue moving the show on. So
pass on
your suggestions.
Send us some pictures if you've got some mowing patterns that you're particularly proud of. You can put them on our Twitter, and we'll have that for you at the end of the show. And you can also send them to our email, and we'll put them on our show notes page.
Yeah. And with that, Teresa, I think that about puts the show in the books.
Sounds like.
Yeah. Be sure to tune in next time to the Diamond Da Vinci's for more talk about ball field groundskeeping. And the best part is, it's all free because we're just giving it away.
Our official webpage for the show can be found at beaconathletics.com/podcast. There you can find the show notes, and we'll include any papers or links or photos that we've discussed during the episode. We'll also have our pictures and bios up there if you're curious to find out more about who you're listening to. But folks, we don't blame you if you're not interested. and we'll also have some bonus material up there from time to time where we've had interviews that go long or we found some extra stuff.
And actually, on my bio, I'm going to start throwing in some pictures of the Little League fields that I take care of for people who are curious to know what I do now.
Oh, cool.
On my spare time. We'd love to hear from you folks. You can email Teresa and I at podcast@beaconathletics.com, where you can send us your questions or comments, or like I asked you before, about favorite apps that you like. Anything good or bad about the show, you can send it to us. If you have show ideas, too, we'd love to get those. Send them right along as well.
And if you're a Twitter follower, our Twitter handle is at Diamond Da Vinci's. That's DAVINCIS. We're not crazy active there, but we will be, just like on our show page, sharing some interesting links and talking to you about what we're preparing for the show.
The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics for over 67 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. That's it for us, folks. We'll see you next time on the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast.
Adios.